Hi, thanks for tuning in to the Generative Work Podcast with me, Sarah James Wright, exploring all aspects of future business and conscious leadership. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Lauren Curry, the founder of Upfront. Welcome to the podcast, Lauren.
Hi, Sarah. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And I was looking up, so you and I have been working together for about 6 months.
And I was only 6 months?
I know. That's what I thought, because it just feels like I've known you forever. You know, it's that sort of feeling like we've just fallen into a groove. And I was just thinking, oh my goodness, is it only 6 months? So there you go. It's surprising.
Yeah. Also, I definitely deserve some sort of present for how much I've changed in those 6 months. If it's only been 6 months, in my head I was thinking it was at least a year. So we've done very well together, I think
we have. And yes, you do deserve a present. We'll have to work out what that's gonna be. I think some really, really nice present. And I was thinking that I actually, when I was sort of looking up, and it was, I think, you know, May, June when we started, I was thinking, is that May, June 2021? You know, because it just didn't feel like 6 months. So it's been a beautiful, expansive, lovely journey working with you for 6 months.
Absolutely.
So to begin with, tell us a little bit about Upfront.
So Upfront is my organisation. I founded it in 2016 by accident, really.
And
as you do. And at the time, it was very much just something that I had on the side, and then kind of over the years, through prototyping and evolving the idea, it's grown into what it is now. So I went full time 23 months ago. Mm-hmm. And now we are a team of six. We are the world's top choice for organizations and individuals who want to better their relationship with confidence and increase their confidence, build a culture of confidence. We are on a mission to support 1 million women and non-binary people with their confidence. And we just passed our £1 million revenue mark last week.
Amazing.
So we are at a really exciting kind of crossroads of growth. And yeah, that's what we're all about.
That's amazing. Fantastic. And well done on your first million. Just the first, you know.
Yeah, on to the next 10.
To the next. Yeah. But that's a brilliant milestone to achieve. So congratulations for that. Really, really amazing. And so say a bit more about the benefit that Upfront creates. You know, say you're kind of improving confidence, but what do you think people walk away with?
So I think, you know, it helps to take a step back and think about what we know and understand of the world as it is. Like, we know that from a very young age, girls are taught to behave in a certain way that's different from how boys are taught to behave. Mm-hmm. So we know that from as early as age 4, girls get very strong signals from society. Now, that might be cartoons, books, parents, friends, peers, that tell them to stay small, to stay quiet, to be a peacekeeper, to make sure everybody's happy, to not rock the boat. You know, you have your own version of these stories, Sarah. I have my own. Yeah. Every woman listening will have her version of that. And to see how that, the consequences of that learning, really impacts your behavior. It has a huge impact on how people show up in the world, the permission that they think they have to show up in certain spaces, the permission that they think they have to do certain things in the world in a certain way. And when you're showing up in a world that is deeply unjust, deeply sexist, deeply racist, ableist, you know, all the isms and prejudices that we can think of, that means that we end up with a world that is deeply unequal. And so Upfront has a laser focus on this point of our relationship with confidence. We want to change how the world, particularly women, think and understand what confidence is, where it comes from, how it grows, how to nurture it in others. Because we are given a very fixed message from the world about what confidence is. We are taught that it is, there's one version that we should aspire to and one version that we should celebrate. And there is one version that the world rewards, because we see it all over our TV screens and in every meeting we attend. And that version of confidence is masculine, it's extroverted, it's brash, it's loud. And that narrow definition becomes an excuse to perpetuate sexism and to perpetuate these harmful stereotypes mm-hmm. of what confidence is. So up front is changing that. And we kind of straddle the middle of the Venn diagram of working the individuals who work with us experience transformation in their own growth and their understanding of their power and agency. And at the same time, we are looking at the system, like what are the roles and power that each of us have to influence the system so that this conversation will become redundant. And I kind of liken it to the work that Brené Brown is doing around vulnerability. So we want to do what Brené is doing for vulnerability, for confidence. Mm-hmm. I can share like what that looks like tangibly. So in our last cohort, so each cohort that goes through our program is called a bond, which is mm-hmm. a collective noun for a group of women. And bond number 5 saw and their average increase in confidence over the 6 weeks was 109%.
Fantastic.
And we know, because we've been running bonds for 2-3 years now, that it's a sustainable change. It's long-term behavior change. And you know, that sometimes looks like earning more money at work. It sometimes looks like leaving a toxic relationship. It sometimes looks like going to therapy that you've been putting off for years. It sometimes looks like starting your own business. You know, there's so many different shapes and sizes of how that confidence manifests itself. But I want to build a world where a lack of confidence is never the reason why a woman doesn't do the things she wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I think what you're talking about is something I see in my work a lot of the time, particularly what you said about there's kind of one style of confidence that's valued and rewarded in society. And the danger of that in organizations is that the organization and society and our whole ecosystem moves in that direction, and mm-hmm. something's getting missed that's actually vitally important for a balance. And we know we're in a very unbalanced world at the moment, you know, the inequalities that you've mentioned. And even I think the whole climate emergency has been kind of mm-hmm. brought about by this inability to sort of take care of the whole and bring what we might call a more feminine perspective to leadership mm-hmm. rather than this just, yeah, kind of bully boy, eaten schoolboy kind of piece that just gets promoted the whole yeah. time. And what do you think then? I agree too that how you express that confidence in the world can be wherever your life fits. You know, it could be, you could be a stay-at-home mum and project that onto your children and the people around you and be doing a fantastic job about that. It's not necessarily about, to me, leading is a quality that we all need to practice. It's not related to your job title.
Yeah.
So I love that too. How do you do it? What are you doing in the bond that helps people to realize who they truly are?
Oh, it's a secret, I can't tell you.
Oh, just okay. Secret bond.
So the bond has, as I kind of mentioned at the start, it's evolved over the 6 years of workshopping, conversations, prototyping. So the first iteration of Upfront was me putting a big red sofa on stage with me when I gave keynotes so that people with stage fright could sit and chill out and realise actually it's not that scary up here. And no. You know, not about everybody has to go talk on stage, but it's about if one day you'd like to do that, I want you to know that you can do it, and I want you to say yes, because I want to see more women on stages. And so through conversations with, we ended up, it's like 500 people sitting on the sofa at different conferences around the world, and my mum made like upfront cushion covers, and we used to post them to the different conferences. I know, it's super cute. And then I would talk to those folks, and they would be, some of them would just be totally transformed, like, oh my goodness, I'm so excited. What do I do now? Do you have a workshop? Do you have a book? Do you have a podcast? And of course, I didn't have any of those things. Mm-hmm. So when I looked out into the market to see where can I send these people, I saw this really big opportunity to build, let's call it training, let's call it facilitation, you know, how, whatever language we want to use, to build some sort of program mm-hmm. that was centered in the idea that this is not a woman problem, this is a society problem. Like, yeah. I couldn't see anything else that was starting from that place. And so the first workshops that I started to play with and test was really my own skills from service design. So my first business was a service design consultancy. My background is design. So service design, facilitation, improv, mm-hmm. stand-up comedy. I teamed up with a friend of mine who'd gone to acting school. So she did a lot of the like body physicality stuff of confidence. And so we would run those workshops and then get lots of feedback. They were amazing. People loved them. But we started to really understand what the problem was, what people needed. Then businesses got wind of what we were doing and asked us to come and run those workshops for them. Mm-hmm. And so the bond is essentially a 6-week amalgamation of 10 years of public speaking, 6 years of running these workshops, conversations with probably over 1,000 women about, you know, what feels hard about this, what help do you need, what's your sticking point. Mm-hmm. And so the way that it works is we've got pre-recorded content, mm-hmm. and those are split up into kind of 3 chapters: content around your mindset, content around the physicality of confidence, and then the reality, like, what does this look like next Tuesday when I go to work? Yeah. And then the most important piece about sharing your power, so privilege, anti-racism, you know, now that you have accessed this new power, how are you going to use it to do good in the world, especially for the white women who come on our programs? And it's really important that we acknowledge the role that whiteness plays in that conversation. So yeah. You have the pre-recorded videos, and folks, you know, some people watch them in the bath, watch them when they're breastfeeding, watch them on the train. They're 5 minutes long. Then we have a weekly live session every Monday, which is a bit like a TED talk, where really high energy, motivating, exciting, full of knowledge, tips and insights, strategies. The community upvote what question and challenge they want me to talk about on those lives. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that, we have a kind of smaller 3-4 person peer-to-peer breakout session where they can reflect on what they've learned. And then the third piece is the community. So we have an online community. And the community is an essential, vital part of what makes the program so transformational, because we have built it so intentionally around the ideas of vulnerability, of grace, psychological safety. You know, we talk a lot about creating a brave space. It's, you know, I can't say that it's going to be a safe space for everybody, because that would be naive of me. Mm-hmm. But we're working really hard to create a brave space where discomfort is present, where disagreements can happen. And people, you know, the most common feedback we get about the community is people feel they can be themselves in that space in a way that they've never felt before. They're having conversations there that they wouldn't have with their spouse or their friends or their girlfriends or co-workers. And so the combination of those three elements are what make a bond and what make it brilliant.
Beautiful. And I love the fact you call it a bond. You know, that's really beautiful language.
It's funny because people think that I invented that, and I'm like, no, it's an actual
word
in the dictionary. Because I went through this wee rabbit hole of learning all these collective nouns. There's so many fun ones, like a group of owls is called a parliament of owls.
I've heard that one, yeah. And there's a murder of crows. Birds often have good ones, don't they?
I can have that one. There's been a murder. I would have made fun of for that one. But yeah, that I had no idea. And as soon as I heard it, the girls who, the young women who tweeted me to tell me, do you know about this one? Mm-hmm. I like sent them a present in the post and stuff.
Oh, so
I
was
like,
nice.
you've just changed my business. Like this is just perfect. I love it so much. And yeah, so we've had 6 bonds. Bond 7 happens next summer. And mm-hmm. our community is Global Bonds. So that's like our ongoing membership community.
Beautiful. I think there's a couple of things I'm really chiming with from what you've said. One is the idea of courage, because or bravery, you know, which means maybe slightly different things. Because I think when I'm coaching someone, a lot of people come in and I say, right, what do you want? They say, well, I want more confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think the danger with upfronting that, if I can use that word, it's almost like people are waiting till they feel perfect before they leave in. And I always say to them, confidence is the thing you're going to get out the other end. Let's help you to find the ways to step into that challenge, really boost yourself, resource yourself, find what helps you to access your courage and your resilience and your creativity, and, you know, back yourself and find people to back you, so that you're willing to take that risk and have a go. And then I think if you do that, you're going to pop out the other end with a greater degree of confidence.
I totally agree. I think I always talk about confidence not being a destination. It's like there's no final point that you can reach, and it's something that you can only get by taking action.
Yeah.
And that's like an unfortunate truth, right? Because people want to think they can talk or read their way into it. It's like you need to do stuff. It's through the doing that the confidence comes. And then also recognizing that because it's not a destination, it's something that ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
You know, I have to always remind people, it's like I'm the founder of a business that's all about confidence. Of course I have days when I don't feel confident. You being my coach can attest to this. Like I'm very much still on this journey, like everybody is. There's no finished product, but there's also, I think, a freedom and liberation that comes with accepting that as like this is part of being human. It's like you wouldn't be human if you felt top of your game and 100% brave all the time.
Well, you'd be foolhardy, I think, if that was the case. Yeah. You know, there's times when it's right to be circumspect about something.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have your tools to be able to kind of test out, is this the right thing for me, or what does this need? And I think actually, I mean, for everybody, but particularly for women, it's tuning into our intuition a little bit more. If you just get that sense that this isn't quite right yet, you know, dig a bit deeper into that. Why does it feel not right? What do you need to feel ready to go ahead? So I think that sort of digging a bit deeper and thinking a bit before you leap is also part of developing a more confident attitude. But like you say, it's just on any given day, you'd be up, you can be down. It's about also having the tools that if you're lacking in confidence,
You know how to boost it. Yeah,
you know how to boost it. You know how to, in our language, we'd probably say resource yourself. You know, it's like, well, you need to top yourself up, take yourself out of the game for a minute, look after yourself, get into your kind of right headspace, and then go back in. And sometimes that's hard if you've got a presentation that day and you just don't feel confident that day, then you do your best you can that day, and you know there's always another day, you know. So anyone in a purpose-led business, it comes out of a passion, you know, in them. What was it that drove you to think, this is the thing that I want to create in the world?
Well, I think it was a very gradual process. And I had just come out of, you know, my first business, which was also very mission-led. And I guess I was grieving the loss of that and healing from that, and starting to look up and out as to, is there another thing that I could possibly feel as excited and as passionate about as I did about the previous venture. And, you know, I think the first phase of work with the couch, you know, that was like, okay, this is really helping people, this problem is really big. And I think just the more conversations I had with women, you know, this is a problem that harms people of all genders. It just so happens that I've decided to focus my efforts on women because that's the group that gives me the most energy. You know, this is definitely not serving anybody except the status quo. I think those conversations just really, you know, they just like lit a fire in me, and it's just the flames have been banned ever since.
I feel,
and the more that I understand, the more you see it, and the more I learn, the more I can see how deeply, deeply ingrained gender bias is in our world and our children and how we parent and the media we consume, the decisions we make. And I feel so strongly that if we want to build a fairer, more just world, we really need to look at this. And I find it quite hard to articulate, like, what is it exactly about it, but I know that it makes me feel a certain way. Like, it makes me feel very alive and powerful and busy. And sometimes that's anger and frustration. Sometimes it's joy and hopefulness. Sometimes it's determination. But whatever it is, it always feels very strong. And it means that I'm in a place where my motivation never really wanes. And I'm learning, the more my team grow, my partner's now joined our team, they're a bit like fascinated. I'm like some sort of lab rat. I'm like, what is this? Like, it's just and I don't really know. Like, I guess that's part of the work that we've been doing together, is to help me understand myself more, and like, where does that drive come from, and what is it that makes it feel the way that it feels? Because it's addictive. It's an addictive quality, I think, to put the thing that you're good at into the world and see it help people is just extraordinary. It's like a drug, and I in a healthy way. Of course, there's also the shadow side of it, sometimes consuming, and can be unhealthy, and all the things that, you know, you're all too familiar with. But
the way I like to look at this is, like, you know, the infinity symbol, they call it the Möbius loop, that there's always a sort of inner drive in us that leads us to put something out into the world. And then that goes out in the world, and that sort of calls up an even bigger sense of us, because we're called into a bigger space to serve that. And then it goes out again. So it's sort of like looping up, but that we're constantly growing and evolving. And I think there's something particular about, you know, purpose-led business, whatever we use, whatever term we use around that, because it has the potential to create both personal development and a really significant impact on the world. And I think that sort of that double-ended aspect of it is what excites me about, about working in this kind of sector.
Yeah. And I think my personal purpose aligns exactly with my business purpose. Yeah. And that is a feeling that I wish everybody could experience.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good aim to have, isn't it? That we have that we have a space to know what our personal purpose might be, and that our work aligns with that in some way.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's an expression of it outside work. You know, it might not be through work. It might be that you're a brilliant musician and you've got a day job, you know?
Yeah, that was kind of what I was going to say. I don't mean everybody should go and build the business, because that's, I definitely don't think that. I think it's, you know, it's a very, very niche way of working and living that is not for everybody by any means. And our world wouldn't function if everybody was an entrepreneur. That would be a disaster.
Yeah.
But I think there is something incredibly special and powerful about when those two things align. And also it's interesting because I have that kind of messy middle phase in between my last venture and this one. You know, I found that extremely painful. And I know I have friends at the moment who are in that phase of like exiting one thing and thinking about what's next. And it's very hard to be in that messy, I don't have an anchor, I don't have a North Star.
Yeah.
And I know that some people will be listening to this thinking, gosh, I want to do that and I wish I could, but I don't know what that thing is. And I would just say to you, like, just be patient and be kind to yourself and be gentle, because it will reveal itself. You have to just keep experimenting and exploring, because I think the mistake people make is they think one day they're going to wake up and feel it and know what it is. And I think you only find it by prototyping. You only find it by putting yourself out there, trying new things, experimenting, and it will reveal itself eventually.
I agree with that. And I think it's, you know, one is to give things a bit of space and time, because nothing can emerge without giving it a little bit of space and time. But also I have a sense people, they kind of think, well, I don't know what my purpose is. And they do expect some rock to fall from the sky with it written on, you know. And they often imagine that it's something different from what they're doing now. But really our true purpose is the thing that we're effortlessly good at. You know, it's the thing that's so normal and natural to us. We're not even really considering it because we're looking over there for some rock to fall out of the sky. So I think it is, well, what do I love? What am I good at? And how can I do more of that? You know, what's the thing that brings me joy? That's the place to sort of put a little bit more energy to.
And I think for me, the bit that jumps out to me that was that is, and I remember I used to say to Chris, like, I wish I could just get paid to do this all day, which was essentially like amping people up, like cheerleading other women, like, oh, every day I'm like on LinkedIn, on WhatsApp being like, you're killing it, saw this, thought of you, meet this person, read this, do that. It's like I get so excited by reminding them they're amazing, helping them be more amazing, introducing them to people, making the connections. Like, and I remember saying, I wonder if I could be like a professional cheerleader. Is that a thing that you know, really, that is what
upfront
is.
That's
what the bond is. It's like the best cheerleading squad you've ever had in your life, and you haven't even met all the people in it. But I think that is a really nice way to think about it. Is the thing, also the thing you do, the thing that you would keep doing if nobody was watching.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's that sort of question about, you know, if you won the lottery, you know, what would you do? And if your work, you think, well, I'd still want to do this, might not need to charge for it, but I'd still want to do this. Then, you know, it's something that I think it's that sense of fulfillment and happiness. And I think we've slightly been trained out of looking for those things, you know, by the sort of pressures of that economic squeeze and that idea, well, you just got to work harder and, you know, buy all this shit that you don't need or want. And that, but, you know, we kind of know now that that doesn't bring us happiness. But I think also we need to believe that we deserve happiness.
Well, that's what I was thinking as I was listening to you. And I know that that's something that you've helped me with, because I do recognize that one of the reasons it took me 6 years to lean into my purpose fully was this idea of I couldn't possibly do that because it would be so great. Like, that's not how it works. Like, I was thinking there's no way that this could be my day-to-day because I love it so much. And there was this weird thing in my brain that was like, well, that doesn't match with how the world is, so it can't be right. And now I've obviously accepted that, like, yes, it is real and it can be my day-to-day, but now it's like, what does that look like moving up to the next level? You know, what does that look like to times it by 1,000? And that voice does still come back. I'm like, well, I don't, you know, it's like, could that be? It's like, yes, and you deserve all the good things. And you're right, it's like we've been tricked into thinking that good things need to feel hard all the time. And I don't get me wrong, many days are hard and I have really shit days sometimes, and it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
But in the main, it's a joy. Like, I love it so much.
Yeah. I think we've been trained out of looking for ease. You know, it feels like, well, that can't be right. You know, it's a sort of Protestant work ethic on acid, isn't it? And actually, there's nothing wrong with finding what's easy, what's joyful, what just flows. So if we think about it as a flow state, you know, that's more established language around creativity, you know, that sense when you're just in flow. And I think for me, that idea of being purposeful and fulfilled and happy, that's all aligned with, well, when am I just in flow? And that might also be, you know, there's particular times of the day that you feel more in flow, or particular times of the year. And it's understanding it's not a constant. That's not something you can turn on 9 to 5, but it's just finding it and riding it when it's there, and understanding that's the bit that really, really matters. Mm-hmm. The other stuff is just a bit of a filler, you know?
Yeah. And I think the same applies to relationships, like work relationships, mm-hmm. and yeah. personal relationships, where, you know, it's like it shouldn't be hard work all the time. And I think we kind of underestimate the incredible value of just being a person who's easy to work with, who's easy to get along with, who's easy to trust. But I know sometimes in the past, when it feels easy, it's like, this can't be right. There must be something wrong. There's the, you know, am I going to get tricked? It's like, no,
yeah,
this is just work. It just works.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. And then there's also, you know, given what we said about women being really brought up to be good girls still very often around most of the world, I think there's the value of the place of a rebel, you know, or someone who's a bit of a disruptor, someone who brings a bit of challenge. And I think that's something we need to learn to welcome in a little bit more.
Absolutely.
You know, we can look for ease, but it's all right for things to be a little bit shaken up sometimes, because we have to kind of, often we have to be shaken away from the old system to realize actually that wasn't working for me anyway. And then, you know, I can build something new in this space.
Yeah.
So we usually use the term like loving disruptors. We quite like to be loving disruptors. So we might be quite challenging,
nice.
But it's because we want something bigger for you, or see something broader for you, you know. So it's sometimes I think I need to be challenging in my job, just to sort of poke people out of the places they tend to go and hide in.
Well, someone in our community described up front as a really warm hug and a kick up the arse at the same time. I've been stolen it. It's like on our website and stuff. So I was like, that's it. That is what it is. And I think that also is, that's the same. It's like, I'm going to lovingly disrupt your shit to me. You know, to push you outside your comfort zone in a really gentle, kind way. So I really like the idea of being a loving disruptor. Maybe I'll make his badges.
Yeah, I'm a loving disruptor.
Yeah, I do own a badge machine. That is the type of person that I am. So
I actually have a badge that says it's a fridge magnet, not a badge that says I make grown men cry. Just because
I like
one
that.
Of those things in coaching that, you know, it's the place where you can bring your vulnerability, you know, man or woman. And I had a phase of having a lot of male clients that were just, it was a space where they could let go. And I just, you know, suddenly this fridge magnet appeared and it seemed to speak to who I was at that moment.
Great. You should be proud. We need all the men to cry more, please.
So I want to ask you some questions around upfront as a business, because I feel as if, you know, you and I work in this is purpose-led, mission-led sector. And I feel like those are different kinds of businesses. It feels like that's a different sector that we're building, because it's not run on a purely commercial drive where it, you know, the money's the most important thing. If we look at the kind of old sectors, so there was like the commercial sector, the for-profit sector. There's the public sector, which is obviously, you know, where government money goes, and they're creating a benefit, but it's still a rather dependent culture. And then also in the not-for-profit sector, there's often an emphasis on the benefit that they're creating, but sometimes people within those kind of organizations are actually driven very hard and overgiving. So for me, this thing about the benefit being both ends of the spectrum, sort of within the organization and outside it, as well as across it, that's one of the features for me for this new sort of sector of businesses that are emerging. Does that resonate with you? And is there do you have a name for that, for what that kind of business is?
Yeah, I think I would talk about, I would describe us as a mission-driven startup, purpose-led organization. I think mission is the word that I am drawn to. So mission-driven, mission-led, for-profit, for-purpose. And you're right, I think there's the language around it is still very emergent. And, you know, I know you and I had a really interesting conversation about my decision to share with the world our 1 million revenue mark. And, you know, I was really scared to share that. I really, you know, I asked for your counsel and a few other people on, am I crazy to think I should do this? Like, what if? Now, of course, where we are now, I've done it. And I think, I genuinely think it's the, and you know me, I write online every day. I've been sharing my work online for over 10 years. I think it's the most response I've ever had to anything that I've ever shared, ever. And incredibly positive. Like, I think I was definitely prepared for the like high fives and shit, that's amazing, good work. I wasn't prepared for the love. So I got a lot of voice notes and messages. I mean, I was crying multiple times that day, just absolutely blown away by real, genuine love that people expressed. And I, the reason I tell that story is I think it's in, you know, I think it's inherent, like directly connected to this idea of running a business that is creating impact in the world, but is generating profit, and standing in that space proudly, I think is particularly hard if you're a woman, even harder if your product is, I mean, we're essentially selling a feminist product, like a feminism idea as our product. So then it's even harder again. And we don't have a ton of role models. Like, I would struggle to point to other women I see running for-profit, purpose-led organizations who are kind of 5 years ahead of me. Like, I would find that quite difficult. There are just not very many of us. And so I think it's really important that we have these conversations about the language and about behind the scenes. And I'm so happy that you're asking me about my business, because all the other podcasts and conversations I have, mostly we talk about the kind of the content of my business rather than the fact that, you know, I'm an entrepreneur building a venture. Like, that's a very, it's a huge industry, but yet it seems to be, because there's a social aspect to it, folks miss that bit out. And for me, that's equally as exciting and equally interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really want to celebrate you, one, for, you know, creating this venture, two, for hitting that million mark, and three, for shouting about it, because what that makes possible, you know, you really are one of the pioneers in this sector. We don't know really what this is about. I mean, that's my purpose, is to serve this sector and find what does leadership look like? How do we run a business in this sector? And we don't know that yet, because we're creating that as we go. And and similar to your Bond for Women around confidence, we need a community of us at this kind of edge, this kind of slightly painful, quite exciting edge,
yeah,
to know, well, how have you done this? How have I, you know, sharing some of the tips around that. So I think, and we are edge dwellers, you know, there isn't a map for what to do out here.
There isn't? I mean, that's why I called my son Atlas, like, show me the way.
I often think that's why I live in Brighton, you know, and I'm obsessed by the sea. I like to be on the edge, you know, I like to look out into that sea of possibility and know that, you know, there's something out there. Now, obviously, I know it's France, but there were times when people stood on that edge and they didn't know what was out there and they journeyed beyond. So there's that excitement and spirit of adventure of the explorer that I think is in this, you know, conscious entrepreneur, purpose-led pioneer. There's a lot of language around it. I think broadly there's a movement where we all mean sort of the same thing and we don't tightly define what that means, which is fine. It is emergent. But I guess I'm wondering for you, what's thinking about that, like not just the impact that you're having on the women who go through the bond, but the impact you're having as an entrepreneur, and what's the best thing at working at this edge and the toughest thing for you?
So I think the toughest piece is about what we said earlier of the coming together of personal purpose and business purpose means that my identity is extremely wrapped up in my business, and it can be very hard for me to untangle sometimes what is Lauren the human and what is Lauren the CEO and the founder and what is Upfront the organization. And so that can be all consuming at times. It also feels very risky because we know that all of the data shows us that women entrepreneurs are treated very differently from male entrepreneurs, and that if you know, they're just much quicker to be cancelled, for lack of a better word. You know, there's a much greater risk there, and I think both of those things mean that there's a bias towards a burnout and overworking and kind of over giving. And I think those things could probably be said for any woman running any business of any kind. But when you add in the layer of, you know, we know all the data about female CEOs, how few of them there are, how few of them raise capital, how few women-led businesses make over £100,000. And then add into that being the CEO of a company that's trying to essentially get people to buy into feminism, to buy our products. Like, we're also selling a social movement.
Yeah.
So not only am I selling a product and selling this, a service, I'm having to convince these people to buy into the idea that of gender equality, essentially, which is really, really, really difficult. And I think it's a combination of all those three things and how they intersect that makes, that's the hardest bit for me.
And the best bit?
I think the best bit is the stories. So I want to tell you that I want to tell you two short stories of impact that I've been really proud of recently. So as a woman called Donna Patterson, who was on maternity leave with her second baby, she was a buyer at Morrison's, the big supermarket, went back to work after having her baby and discovered that even though she had a part-time contract, she'd been given a full-time job. And so asked all the right questions, went to all the right people, and was getting essentially, we think you're great, we believe you can do it, which, you know, is not okay. So she called the Pregnant Then Screwed helpline, which is an incredible maternity discrimination charity that I'm chair of the board of, and they gave her a lot of advice on what to do and who to contact and the different legal process to go through. At the same time, she signed up to Bond 6 because she was starting to feel, you know, I've got a fight coming and I need confidence and community to help me do this. And so she discovered that she did have legal insurance who would pay for her to take her employer to court for maternity discrimination, and was given a very clear message that they didn't think she stood a chance of winning, so therefore they wouldn't pay her fees. And at this point, she was in the Bond, she was talking in the community, she was asking for help, we were rallying around her. And she decided to represent herself. Absolutely no legal training whatsoever. She had to cross-examine 8 witnesses. Wow. Over a period of 5 days. This is all with a tiny baby and another small child. Okay. All the stress and anxiety of, you know, what if this goes wrong? What if I never work again? And she won.
Wow.
So she took Morrison's to court by herself and won. They paid her £60,000.
Wow.
She did not sign a non-disclosure agreement, which is why she's been all over. The newspapers are calling her the Erin Brockovich of Bradford.
And, I love it.
You know, she was on Steph's Packed Lunch on Channel 4 saying, I wouldn't have been able to do this without Upfront. You know, I think it's moments like that where, you know, it just takes my breath away of like what's possible when you remind women that they do have the confidence they need to do the thing.
Yeah.
And then another story that happened this week was one of the Bonders had a little boy, I think he's kind of 4 or 5, and they were collecting money for Poppy Day. So they were all asked to bring in their pennies to get a poppy. And her little boy took in his money the day after Poppy Day, and the teacher refused to give him a poppy. And so he was distraught and came home really upset. And she said to me, you know, before Upfront, I probably wouldn't have spent too much time thinking about it.
Yeah.
But I decided, like, you know what, that's not really okay, because this is a little boy and he was excited to get his poppy and he had his pennies. Mm. And so she sent him to school the next day with his school bag covered in poppies and said to the teacher, like, what happened wasn't really okay. And the teacher didn't really have much to say. But then the next day she received a call from the head teacher apologising for what happened. And I think, you know, she was sharing that with me, saying I would never have done this before the Bond. And I think those are two very different stories that illustrate the impact of Upfront from the micro level to the macro level.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely, without a doubt, the best bit of my job, because we're already, I mean, we've had over 2,000 graduates. There's 2,000 women in the world who have gone through our program. There's probably 3 times that who listen to our podcast to share our ideas. It's like these ideas are starting to spread and ripple through teams and organizations and communities and neighborhoods. And that's what we need to make the change happen.
And I love that. And if we imagine that rippling out and all of those women, then all the women that are coming on the Future Bonds, what's, if there was like one gift to the world that you could give through the impact that you're creating, what would that be? You know, what's the power of 1 million confident women? What would you most want changed?
I want to see what a little girl who grows up feeling free of those harmful narratives, I want to see what she looks like and watch what she does.
I love that. I love that, Lauren. That's so great. Oh, that really touches me. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And what the one small step that we can all take towards that now?
Yeah, so when I was preparing, because I like to think about these things, it's, you know, they're important, hard questions. So one small step we can take, I wrote fuck small steps.
One giant leap that we can one take giant right leap.
So I'm going to tell you another story. This is the small step. So I recently read a book by Robert Webb, the Peep Show actor. It's a great book. I'm trying to read more books by white men who are talking specifically about masculinity. And so in this book, he talks about the conversations that he has had with his two daughters, who are like 3 and 6, about the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And him and his wife came up with this concept called the trick. And they teach their daughters to spot the trick. Now, the trick makes you think that there are different ideas and behaviours for boys and girls, when actually we know that there isn't. Mm-hmm. And so one day his daughter said, you know, it's Halloween, we get to dress up at school, but if I wear a superhero costume, the girls will be confused, the boys will laugh. Yeah. Is that the trick? And he said, you know, the trick is what makes women get rubbish jobs and what makes men sad. Mm-hmm. So I thought this was an amazing idea, and I started to, I didn't talk to my son about it directly, so he was mm-hmm. 4 and a half, mm-hmm. but me and my partner started to talk about it in his presence, yeah. probably about 6 months, mm-hmm. and then over dinner one night he was like, what is the trick, and why do you keep saying that? And so we said, you know, well, the trick is this force in the world that tricks us into thinking that some things are only for mummies, or some things are for daddies, or mm-hmm. And then probably about 2 months later, we were lying in bed and he said to me, can we talk about the trick? And I said, sure. I said, okay, well, you want to tell me, did you see the trick today? And he proceeded to tell me about 10 different stories. So the trick makes people think that only boys can, that only girls can have long hair. The trick yeah. makes people think that only daddies drive cars. The trick makes people think that only girls can wear nail varnish, but I'm a boy and I like to wear nail varnish.
Yeah.
The trick makes people think that only boys play football. So by this stage, I'm like,
yeah, sure.
And it's now, you know, we're now at a place where every day he'll say, it comes up in some way. And last yeah. night when we were having dinner, he was like, I don't want any vegetables. And I said, look, you need to have vegetables if you want to be strong like daddy. And he just looked at me and went, trick.
That's so cool.
And he's 5. And wow. I just think, what would happen if every single parent, person with young children in their life,
yeah,
introduced them to the trick? Because the trick works for all these prejudices yeah. that we yeah. that we have. And when you apply the trick to confidence, it's back to what we've talked about. Mm-hmm. I want folks listening to think about, oh, what are all the ways you've been tricked into thinking confidence is about big chest, bravado, aggression,
yeah, yeah.
and what might it look like for you to build a new version of confidence that feels gentle and powerful and soft and quiet and kind.
Yeah.
So that we can beat the trick out of existence.
I love that. That's amazing. And isn't that stunning that a 4-year-old completely grasps that concept?
Yeah, and totally.
You out with it by the time he's 5. Yeah. And I want to add just that idea of like, what's the internal trick? Because I think for adults, mm-hmm. you know, we're already conditioned, so that it's that back mm-hmm. to that loving disruptor. And I think if we can start to hear the internal dialogues we're having with ourselves mm-hmm. and start to notice when you tell yourself, well, I can't do that because, mm-hmm. and actually, you know, even without changing anything, just to bring into our conscious awareness those patterns that tend to be operating at a hidden unconscious level, just bring that to the light and think, oh my God, I notice how often I say, you know, oh, I'm so busy that X, or I mm-hmm. can't do that because, you know, just listen to what that internal dialogue is mm-hmm. and find out what your own tricks are, because it, you know, it's almost a little bit harder to dig them out of yourself than to kind of, children come, you know, in this sort of natural state,
yeah,
to fuck them up, you know.
Well, that's what you're here for. That could be
that's
your
new,
that's that could be your new bio. You dig out the tricks.
Yeah. Well, we've been sort of developing a leadership program where we've been calling it the leadership unprogram, because it is really about unprogramming, you know, it's unblocking ourselves as a starting point. Cool. So a couple of more questions about being a conscious entrepreneur, generative leader. What's the one thing that you wish you knew when you started?
Oh, so many things. And I'm sure you know how I would answer this question before I worked with you, which is not going to be my answer this time. very mysterious insider story. I think it's about, I wish I had known and trusted that there are amazing, amazing people out there who will stand by your side and work hard and care about it as much as you do. Because for a very, very long time, I just didn't believe that. I just didn't think those people existed. And they really do. And they're amazing.
That's a brilliant answer. I love that. And I really hope anyone listening takes that on board. You know, you've got some big mission in mind. Just trust there's other people out there. And we can't do it alone. That's why I love that we keep coming back to this idea of community, you know, and actually trusting there's a community out there for you, whatever, you know, whoever you are, whatever you want to do with the, you know, special, wonderful thing that is you, there's going to be a community out there to support you. Just keep trusting and find them.
100%. And, you know, you will along the way kiss some frogs, if that's the right expression. You know, it's a bit it's a bit like dating. It's like you have to, but you have to keep going and keep experimenting and keep trusting to an extent, which is very hard when your mission is so precious to you. But it's so worth it when you find the right people who have the right skills and they get it and they want to be on this mission with you. It's just amazing.
And I think when you have got that precious thing, it's because it matters. It matters to you. It matters to the world. You know, and I think it's important to find what matters to us. I often think organizations do a very sort of arm's length version of their values. But I think it's nice to think about what matters to me. What's the thing that matters most to me? And kind of build out from there. So you've mentioned a few things that resource you. Anything else? Because I think this idea of resourcing, getting help, getting support is really important for anyone out at this pioneering edge. Is there anything else that you'd want to name that really helps you to do what you're doing?
Yeah, so there's been a recent shift for me since moving to Sweden, and that I've started to spend a lot more time outside. Spend a lot more time in the forest, and I've started running. I ran for the first time in March, and I've signed up to run my first marathon.
Cool.
And I swim in the cold lakes, which are very cold now. I've not been in since it snowed, but I'm excited to do that. I think, though, you know, I really don't think it's a coincidence that my business is in the best shape it's ever been in, and I am also in the best physical mental shape I've ever been in. They I think force me to take time out of my day to exercise, to do things that just put me being immersed in cold water, you don't have any choice. There's nothing else you're thinking about other than like trying where am I getting out of here. I think therapy, coaching, working with you, working with therapists is vital, you know, has helped me so much. The amazing women in my community, my team, my family, you know, my son and my partner really ground me and give me a lot of stability and joy. And it's also just being aware of these things. You know, I think even 5 years ago, I wouldn't have known what to say to that question. Like I wasn't even intentionally or consciously thinking about the idea of nourishing myself. I probably got as far as sleep. Like that was my, like, I'll have a really big sleep at the weekend and catch up. I'll have a long lie. And that was my version of resetting and recharging. But now, you know, now I think it's if you genuinely want to fulfill your potential and have the maximum impact you can have on the world, I think you have to do the inner work, or else you're going to keep being blocked. Like, I think running a business means that you cannot hide from any part of yourself. Like, it really is the worst. Like, there's no, you know, all your flaws, weaknesses, demons,
yeah,
they're just right there. And that's why things like coaching and therapy are brilliant, because, you know, there's experts out there who can help you look at those things, understand them better, all of which leads to more self-compassion. And that's what you need. It's like, to really love yourself. The more you love yourself, the better what you put into the world will be. And I still sounds like a naff Instagram quote or something, but I do really believe it. I'm not sure how else to say it, but I think it's so important.
I agree. I really agree with that. And it's, I mean, that's about true sustainability to me. Because if you're overgiving, if you're not taking care of yourself, something of that, you're still coming from that sense of lack. There's not enough, you know. And I think that if that's what we're putting out into the world, that's what we're just going to get more of. And actually, to me, this shift into purpose-led, mission-led organizations is around, what if there was enough? What if there was enough power, enough love, enough time, enough money, enough food? Yeah. You know, it's like, I think that's the thing that we're co-creating, all of us at this edge.
Yeah. And there is enough. This is
there is enough.
There is enough.
We're enough. I'm enough. You're enough. There is enough. There truly is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the trick's darkest trick.
Yes, that is the trick's darkest trick.
We need to think there's not enough
all the time, and just keep coming back with, there is enough.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, that feels like a good place to end. One last question. Is there a book, a film, a work of art, a building, just a thing that you love that you could recommend to people?
So right now, my favourite song is Unstoppable by Sia.
Oh, yeah.
I love to play that full blast and run really fast. Makes me feel super powerful. TV, I love Sex Education. I love Heartstoppers, Big Boys. Three amazing shows that if you've not seen, I know
you've seen Sex Education. I love that. I haven't seen the other one. And actually, there's a song that I'm thinking about the minute that I just keep playing. It's an old one. It's Tammy Wynette, and it's Your Good Girl's Gonna Go Bad. Have you heard it?
No, but I'm going to play it after this.
It's so cool because some of these old country singers, they were really feminist pioneers. You know, I'm a big fan of Dolly Parton. So this song by Tammy Wynette, and it's saying, you know, obviously I've never been to a bar and I've never drunk, but you seem to like it. She's singing this song to her husband. So I'm going to start hanging out there as well. And it's just this really funny song. And I think all these country singers, it just sounds like a little bit, you know, a bit wishy-washy and fake, but actually underneath there were these powerful feminist messages.
Yeah, yeah.
Breaking
new ground, some of them.
Absolutely. And they were generally you know, they were bad boss bitch women with men who couldn't handle it. So yeah, that song's just on repeat in my head at the minute.
Okay. Well, next time you play it, play this Sia Unstoppable one.
Okay,
That'll be a great combination.
I've known a couple of hers. I don't think I know that one, so I'm going to go and look.
The lyrics are just brilliant.
All right, brilliant. Lauren, thank you so much. It's been beautiful to be with you, as ever.
Thank you so much. I've loved it, as always.
And we'll put up the link to the Upfront website so everyone can go and look at the amazing, stunning, millionaire winning work that you're doing out there in the world. And thank you so much. Keep being amazing, you.
Thank you. And I'll say, if anybody is excited or curious to join Bond 7, then it starts on June 3rd. It's free if you're on maternity leave.
Cool.
So if you're curious or want to get your place, you can visit our website, drop me a line. I'm super happy to chat to anybody who would like to be part of it.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. Well, I hope many women come and sign up for Bond 7, did you say?
Bond 7, yeah.
Brilliant.
So thank you for joining us for this episode of the Generative Work Podcast. And what did you think? If you have any questions or comments, it would be great to get your feedback. And if you would like to come on and ask me 3 questions about generative work, we'd love to hear from you. There are links in the bottom of the description for the email and website where you can get in touch. We're looking to build a truly collaborative community for people interested in working generatively, so all ideas welcome. And we look forward to exploring another topic with you next time. Drop us an email if you'd like an update on our next podcast release.